Welcome, folks, to Labor Relations Information Systems' ongoing podcast interview series. My name is Will Aitchison, and we've got two special guests for us this morning. And they both come from the Sacramento, California area. They've been involved in what I think of as a fascinating public safety union logo case. We don't see too many of these cases involving whether or not union logos can be worn in the public safety workplace. Every once in a while, something will pop up. There's a very notorious case out of the Federal Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals involving whether a fundamentalist Christian police officer could wear a silver cross on his police uniform. But not much else beyond that, and very little focus on whether the wearing of a union logo in the workplace is a protected collective bargaining right. So let me start by introducing our speakers, and then we'll begin the interview. First, we have Jeff Edwards, who's an attorney with the, I think of it as the Mastagni Law Firm. I'm sure I'm doing people injustice there, Jeff, in Sacramento, California. This is a firm that represents public safety labor organizations throughout the Central California area and in other places. They've been involved in representing law enforcement labor organizations, firefighter labor organizations for over 30 years. Jeff is a graduate of the University of California Law School at Davis after getting his undergraduate degree from Berkeley, the University of California in Berkeley. We also have on the phone Steve Loza, and Steve is the district director for Local 522 of the International Association of Firefighters. And Steve, let me start with you. Local 522 represents a number of different bargaining units, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. We're made up of about 1,800 members holistically. But we represent several different agencies, including the City of Sacramento Fire Department, Sacramento Metropolitan Fire Department, Folsom Fire Department, West Sacramento Fire Department, the Consumnes River Fire Protection District Fire Department, and the Sacramento County Airport Fire Department as well.
And the Sacramento County Airport Fire Department, which is the one we're concerned with here, has a rather unusual acronym. Is it really known as ARF?
Well, that's the type of protections they provide. The ARF, A-R-F-F, stands for Aircraft Rescue Firefighting, and that's just an acronym that's recognized nationwide, and actually worldwide, to dictate or describe that type of fire protection. So that would be, you know, the protection of the aircraft flying in and out of any international or national airport, such as Sacramento International.
And it's very specialized training that is required for our firefighters, right?
Yeah, it's similar to, so all the firefighters that work for the Sacramento County Airport Fire Department are all professionally structural trained firefighters, with an addition on top of that of the specialized training, which they call Fire Control 5. It'd be similar to something as a hazmat detail or a special ops or a special rescue detail. So it's added training on top of your normal structural firefighting training.
How many firefighters are out at the airport? In rough terms.
At the Sacramento International Airport Station, there's roughly 27 firefighters that are housed there.
And what's the history of representation out there? Has Local 522 always represented these firefighters since there's been the meet and confer process under California's collective bargaining law, the Myers-Milius-Brown Act?
No, they haven't always been represented by Local 522. It was kind of a long road well before I started out there. I've been on the department almost 13 years now, and this was going on long before me. But they used to be represented by Local 39, which is an AFL-CIO recognized union, a very good union, very strong union. However, it's a very diverse union. There's anywhere from garbage men to stationary engineers to electricians to plumbers, and as well as at this time was the airport firefighters. However, at the time that they were represented by Local 39, the airport firefighters were also refueling aircraft. So it was kind of a really unique situation at the airport years and years ago. And we're talking several years ago, 20 plus years.
When was the change made to Local 522?
The official change was in 2006. that we went to local 522 holistically represented by them. There was a little bit of a process before that that we had to litigate out of local 39 and form our own kind of association with just our own units. And at that time, there was about 45 guys that were a member of this association. And subsequently, we were that for 2 years due to some legalities here in Sacramento, and then we were able to affiliate with Local 522.
Now, let's fast forward to 2011, when at least for formal purposes, we have the union logo issue come up. How did it come up?
Ironically, it came up right when we were able to affiliate with Local 522. At that time, I was the president of the Sacramento County Airport Rescue Firefighters Association. And in that, I moved into a spot which is we call a unit rep, which is basically in charge of that particular unit. So at this time, it was the Airport Fire Department. The fire chief at the time, it had become very clear to us that the county did not want us to affiliate with Local 522. They didn't all but didn't say that they did not want Local 522 having a voice within the Sacramento County Fire Department or their labor organizations. So when we finally were able to transition to Local 522, it was made clear that it would be in bad taste to start wearing the union logos right away and have the union logos displayed on our uniforms. And the reason for that is because every other fire department that Local 522 represents is allowed to wear their union logo proudly. So at that time, we kind of saw the argument there and we somewhat abided by it and said, okay, we get that. It was kind of a play nice type of deal. Through the years, it got worse and worse. And by the time 2011 came around, it was pretty much a rule. It became a rule. So the asking nicely not to in bad taste became, we don't want to see that around here type of a thing, which brought us to 2011.
And in 2011, this kind of culminates with a memorandum from a battalion chief. And how was that eventually applied by the county?
Well, the county, the administrators of the fire department at that time, the chief and the battalion chiefs and assistant chiefs had all given direction that it was not looked highly upon to have the union logo displayed, but didn't really come out and say you couldn't. They subsequently started threatening discipline over wearing the union logos to certain members, and this was brought to my attention at the time. I was still representing solely just the airport at this time. And what because of that, I then called some meetings and we talked about to the chief, and it was never the on paper type of a thing until one day subsequently I was threatened with discipline. So I in turn said, well, you know, chief, if you would like to, you can put that in writing. I don't see any policy that says we can't wear this. There again, then he forwarded the email to me, and that's where this litigation started. We contacted the Mastagni law firm at that point.
And Jeff, now let's turn it over to you. When you heard from Local 522, what routes were you considering taking to challenge the order not to display the Local 522 logo?
Thank you, Will. In addition to litigating this case, we serve as general counsel to Local 522, so we were involved at an earlier stage, but this case really got going as an unfair practice charge in front of the California Public Employment Relations Board because of strategic decisions that the association made to pursue this just as an interference case and resolve once and for all the right to wear this union insignia. And so
let me stop and take apart that sentence that you said, because we have listeners actually from all over the country and even in other countries. California's Public Employment Relations Board, is that the body that oversees the firefighter collective bargaining laws in California?
Yes, there are a number of different collective bargaining statutes in California, and the one relevant here is enforced by that agency. PERB is like the NLRB in some respects. In terms of how this case played out, one of the key structural differences between our PERB or PERB and the NLRB is that the advocates prosecute the unfair practice charges in front of administrative law judges rather than the in-house counsel of the agency.
And you mentioned that you made the decision to pursue this as an interference unfair labor practice complaint. What does that mean, interference?
The association made that decision. So interference means that an employer is doing something which interferes with a union or a union's members' right to engage in concerted activity. And here, the union considered whether to litigate this as an interference case, which if we won, as we did, would mean it was settled once and for all, or as a typical unilateral change case, which could have permitted the employer to, after going through the meet and confer process, to reaffirm the decision. And so there was a lot of forethought and strategic decision-making by Brian Rice, Steve Loza, and the leaders of this local to make sure they could resolve this issue once and for all in the way the litigation was structured.
Now, let's talk about interference cases for just a moment. Talk about them more in the abstract than anything else. There's no question that an employer has a right to regulate some union activity in the workplace. I mean, for example, a union couldn't call a five-hour meeting on the employer's premises and have all on-duty employees show up. Is there some sort of balancing test that is used to evaluate these interference cases?
Yes. In California, our agency follows the NLRB's lead for the most part. And the first prong just asks whether what the employer is trying to do in some way inhibits or interferes with the concerted activity. But then the employer can prove that it has a compelling business need to make the limitation or restriction that it's doing. And that's really how this case played out.
And when PERB is considering your case, is it writing on a blank slate?
No, there is context to this decision, though, as you previewed, there isn't a lot of case law directly on point in public safety uniforms. Most of the authority that addresses the right to wear a union insignia has been litigated at the National Labor Relations Board and in the federal circuit courts. But as I'm sure you can imagine, very few local public safety employees are covered by the National Labor Relations Act. There is a case, a federal case that concerned Border Patrol agents who are covered under one of the sister collective bargaining statutes in the federal government that addressed a similar question. And there's an important case from Massachusetts addressing local correctional officers who have a similar uniform requirement and their rights concerning union insignia.
And from all of these cases, don't we get a rule that in your decision, the PERB's decision, is referred to as the special circumstances rule?
That's correct. There is an overarching rule, sometimes called special circumstances or the Parks or Republican Aviation test, that does apply in these circumstances. And the analysis is usually applied in basically the same way, where the first question is whether or not the union or the union members have or want to wear union insignia, and then whether the employer has tried to stop them or punish them in some way for doing that. Once that's satisfied, the burden shifts to the employer to show that there's some special circumstance which allows them to do that. And there are a number of cases from the National Labor Relations Board and the federal circuits addressing that in different private sector contexts.
And what might be special circumstances that would justify an employer saying, hey, you can't wear a union logo in our workplace or under these circumstances?
Well, for example, if the type or medium of union logo that an employee or union member wanted to wear might interfere with the use of required safety equipment, like a mask, and that couldn't clasp around someone's face because of the type of insignia that was being worn. That would be a special circumstance where the employer can say you're not allowed to wear that type of insignia.
What about customer reaction to a union logo? Let me tell you what I'm thinking about, Jeff, is we do a bunch of seminars down in Las Vegas, and I pass casually through casinos when we're down there and can't help but notice the union logos on dealers and people who work in restaurants and the like. And sometimes I would imagine there are customers who have some sort of positive or negative reaction to that. Is that a special circumstance that could justify a ban on the union logo?
There have at times been courts of appeal that have discussed that as a special circumstance, but I think the consensus now is that opinions of some members of the public alone is insufficient to overcome the federally protected rights of employees under the National Labor Relations Act.
In your case, the board ends up concluding that there were no special circumstances that would justify the ban on wearing Local 522 logo. Why, Jeff? Why did that happen?
Well,
what was the rationale?
The rationale on that is that it actually wasn't disputed whether there were special circumstances in this case. This case proceeded where we were attempting to apply the normal standard, and the county's position was that the normal standard, the special circumstances test, did not apply because public safety employees who wear uniforms just don't have any right at all to wear union insignia. And that's how it proceeded at the administrative law judge. I was surprised when the administrative law judge agreed with that decision, and when that happened, we appealed it to the full board, which is the highest level of the agency appointed by the governor.
And how did the board analyze that issue, the application of the special circumstances test in the public safety context?
The board said that the same rules that apply to everyone else apply in the public safety context. So that would mean that an employer would have to prove with actual evidence that there's a special circumstance. I think the key to understand in the application of this test, both in the NLRB and federal cases addressing it, and in our case, is that an employer bears the burden to prove there actually is a special circumstance, not just that they can think of one or that they anticipate one, but that it actually exists, that they can prove with evidence.
And this, in your case, the county was unable to meet that burden of proving.
Correct. It would have been impossible for them to try, because here in Sacramento, as Steve discussed, every other agency in the metro allows people to wear these union insignia. And interestingly, this particular agency, the county, had previously allowed them to wear the same union insignia, except instead of as a blue T-shirt, it was a pink T-shirt in support of breast cancer awareness, bearing the union insignia. There were no problems, no complaints, and no operational consequences.
So it is indeed possible to fight a fire in Sacramento County wearing Local 522 logo. Is that the conclusion we are to draw?
That's what the evidence shows.
And what was the remedy that PERB ordered in your case?
The remedy ordered a rescission of the unlawful order. It ordered a notice posting, and it followed, as it has for about a year now, the NLRB's remedial order and required an electronic distribution of that notice posting to the affected employees. So they had to say that they broke the law. They had to admit that they'd been overruled by a state agency. They had to rescind the order and allow people to wear the union insignia. And they had to email all the affected employees and tell it to them again.
Is the county going to appeal this, or are we done?
I believe that we're done.
And Steve, I want to turn back to you for a moment. Have things gotten a little bit better in terms of the relationship between the county and Local 522 where we're not in this sort of dispute?
Yeah, I would have to say yes. We have to understand here that when this started back in 2011, there was a fire chief sitting in place, and he is no longer there. We have another chief now that is definitely hears both sides of the table, management and labor, and the working relationship now is very good. This was one last little piece that we had to put together, and unfortunately, We had to take it to the steps that we did, but ultimately we got it resolved the way we wanted to get resolved, and so we're very happy. But I would have to say that the working relationship is a lot better nowadays.
And Jeff, let me conclude with a question to you. That sounds like it's going to be brief, but it may not be. What does this say to us about an employer's ability to regulate the wearing of the logo in other public safety contexts? So, for example, let's stay in the fire service for a moment, on the dress uniform of a firefighter.
What this case says is that employers have to have a good reason that they can prove with actual evidence why they're going to interfere with someone's legally protected right to express their solidarity with their union. Whether that's on their dress uniform or on a t-shirt underneath it is of no consequence. If they're going to ban it, they have to prove that it's fully justified, and they bear the risk of losing if they're just guessing. It's not so different than similar cases that address government restrictions on employees' First Amendment activity, where actual disruption is the standard that an employer must meet in order to restrict the protected speech. Here, whether it's on a publicly seen uniform, Class A's, whether it's on safety equipment or anywhere on their person, the presumption is that union members have a right to express the solidarity with their labor association by wearing the insignia, and the employer imperils itself by trying to restrict it.
Does that translate neatly into a law enforcement context?
It does. The real question is whether there's an operational impact. Oftentimes in public safety, there's a desire to have a lot of control and to restrict employees in one way or another because these are organizations that culturally have to have a lot of order. But that doesn't mean that there isn't a space for legally protected expression of union solidarity. There just has to be a balance between the two.
Well, great. Jeff and Steve, I want to thank you a lot for agreeing to participate in this interview. Congratulations on the board's decision, and I wish you the best of luck in the future.
Thank you.
Okay. Have a good day, gentlemen. Thanks.
Take care.